It's time for episode 545 of the Clockwise Podcast from Relay FM, recorded Wednesday, March 13th, 2024. Clockwise, four people, four tech topics, 30 minutes. Welcome back to Clockwise, the tech podcast that's saving daylight one half hour at a time. My name is Dan Moore, and I'm joined across the internet by my good friend, my co-host, my pal, the one and only Micah Sargent. How are you doing today, Micah?
I'm still catching up with daylight saving. God. You know, it's I thought I'd be ready to roll, but I go to bed so early, or I have been these past few days. And then I wake up and I go, I thought I got extra sleep, but it doesn't feel like it. Mm-mm. So, yeah, I don't know.
I'm not saving daylight. That's true. This is, of course, the show where we invite on two fantastic guests to talk about four tech topics. To my left this week, it is a consumer tech reporter from Gizmodo, Florence Ion. Welcome back, Flo.
Hello, I'm happy for the sun, but not happy for the dark mornings.
I hear that.
And to my left, it's podcast host and Six Colors contributor, John Moltz. Welcome back, John.
Hi. I like the sunlight, but I don't like the time change. And my dog just doesn't seem to get the memo no matter what way we go. Mm.
So. Have you sat the dog down and explained time, John?
I think the problem is he can't read the memos, actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah, that is an issue. All right. We got four tech topics in just 30 minutes. Let me kick things off. The European Commission has been forcing several big tech companies into opening up their platforms thanks to the Digital Markets Act. My question for you is, would you want to see these same changes happen in the US, or do you think these things are sort of actively making those products from those companies worse? Flo, let's start with you.
I think you know what I'm going to say, and I like the idea of the European Commission opening up iOS to allow more third-party integrations outside of the beautifully taken care of walled garden. But in all sincerity, I also kind of saw what's been going on the Android side of things, because Google's actually also in some hot water in the EU over some of its practices. And from my perspective, it feels like, wow, I would love to be able to kind of have that pick and choose screen at the beginning of setup that lets me have a search engine outside of Google. Like the idea that the mobile operating systems, you know, it's been such a duality, like it's either Android or iOS. And I just like the idea of opening up the platforms a little bit to just let me grow a little bit. I would love to grow.
I want to pick and choose, Dan. That's what I want. I want to have my cake and eat it too. I want to have
I'll be right back.
Yeah, that's what the EU is bringing, is cake. There are some things that I wish were available in the US, because we heard about how there are all of these prompts that are popping up in iOS to let you see it when you're getting an app from a third party, what it is. That's good. But then it also has these warnings that happen. And then it also turns out that if you leave the EU for a period of time, those apps may not update as one would expect, or you may not be able to use them as you might expect. And that is the stuff that I don't want. I really like the idea of folks being able to be presented when they set up a new phone, what browser they want to use. I think that's a cool feature. And then some of the kind of small changes, being able to maybe get apps from a developer directly from their site with all of the precautions in place is cool as well. So yeah, I don't want it all, but I do want some of it. What about you, John?
I was going to simply say that, yeah, I think this is really good. I think the bigger problem is, at least from Apple's perspective, is the fact that they're being dragged into this kicking and screaming so much that they're obviously going to try and do the least possible thing that they could do to stay within the letter of the law and not actually necessarily try to make this, embrace this and make it work really well for the people in the EU. Because the thing that I wouldn't want to have happen is for a situation to come up where it's like going where you go, now you go to a website, and every time you go to a website, it's like, oh, these are our cookies, and you have to accept the cookies, or if you either have to accept them all, or you got to pick and choose. I don't want to do that every single time I open my phone, for sure. At the beginning, if I want to pick a different browser, that's great. But it does create a situation where your user experience could possibly actually be damaged a little bit. But of course, a lot of that is dependent on how the developers do it. And they could choose to do it in a better way, and they often just don't.
If I got sent real cookies every time they asked me to confirm cookies, we would be having a different discussion, and I would be okay with it. But yeah,
so far we had cake and cookies.
I'm feeling good today. I think in general, I do think that the intent of this legislation and regulation is good, and it is an intent I would like to see elsewhere, which is, to Flo's point, that we have two major operating systems and that is it. And that is not really providing a robust competitive environment, especially now when it feels like a lot of people get stuck in their ways, right? Like, you know, you buy an Android phone or you buy an iPhone and then you're kind of there. There's not a lot of churn back and forth, I get the impression. So there's not a lot of impetus for these companies to really work hard to distinguish their products. And as they get larger and larger, their incentives to keep people locked into their systems are more because they want to hold on to the customers they have. So the only organizations large enough to make an impact here our governments, because the market is not doing its job. So I would like to see some increased regulation because I think that is a necessity for improving the competitive environment. I look forward to, you know, seeing what the experience of these third-party app stores and web distribution of apps is on iOS, because part of me is like, well, depending on how well that goes, that may influence whether we see this in other places. As far as other apps like Google and Meta having to open up WhatsApp and all that stuff, I think these are interesting technological questions, and they may not always work out as well as the European Commission wants, but I think they are necessary conversations to be having at this point in time. But thank you all for your thoughts on that, which I know is a very complex issue that we've distilled down to just a few minutes. And I think we really got to the heart of it. Let's go to our second topic, which comes from Flo.
This year, Samsung is very much focused on the Galaxy Ring being like the new wearable. But there is some hearsay in the rumor mill that Samsung also has some plans for a square smartwatch in the next couple of generations. So, me being a longtime Samsung smartwatch wearer and a person who has stuck to the circular watch faces, I do have an Apple Watch for review purposes, but I tend to prefer those circular ones. And so I was curious if everybody else had their own. I know that, you know, being on the Apple side of things, but, you know, tell me about it. How do you feel? Circular or square smartwatch faces?
It makes sense to do the rectangular sort of squarish design in my mind because of the way that the UI is, right? It makes sense to be able to present more information on screen without stuff being cut off. But at the same time, I really like what some developers and designers on the Android side have done to accommodate that circular watch face. And when we think about clocks, they traditionally do have that circular shape. So there's a part of me that wishes that that was the design language from the get-go, but I understand why the compromise was made to do that more rectangular design in the first place. But yeah, if Apple suddenly decided to come out with a circular smartwatch as an option, I think I'd at least give it a go and hopefully would end up sticking with it because I do miss having that that design on my wrist. What about you, John?
I would say, yeah, from a functional perspective, I really like the square watch and because of the information density, and I have, you know, switched to the modular face on the Apple Watch, and I got a lot of stuff packed onto my watch. Now I can see all kinds of different things, which I think is great. And I make use of basically all of the complications that I have. And I think I've gone through all the other ones and tried the ones that look like, you know, that are round face with, you know, complications up in the corner. And I just don't like them as much functionally. So I don't know. And I know my wife would really prefer a round watch. She's long. She wears her Apple Watch all the time, but she has consistently said that she would love it if they would produce a round one. And it does. Yeah. I mean, I think it really think about constraints, right? They make opportunities to create new designs. So that's kind of cool. And if you have that round face and you have to code to it, then you're going to come up with something that's new and interesting instead of just doing something that we've probably seen in a computer screen a million times before. So, I mean, from that perspective, that's pretty cool. I don't know, maybe make a bracelet with information all the way around the thing. Like, you want to look at the weather, look at the underside of your arm. You want to look at the time, look at the top side of your arm. That'd be kind of cool too, actually. I just came up with that.
Smart tattoos
so,
everywhere.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's an interesting question. I mean, it's not like Square Watch has never existed before. They were certainly probably not as popular, but there have been Square Watches, you know, for years and years. So it's not completely a new thing, but I think it works, and I think I've adjusted to it completely at this point for the most part. I mean, there's a little bit of my heart that says, "Oh, round is really nice," but still, I'm enjoying the experience.
I've worn probably an Apple Watch longer than I've worn any other like single style of watch in my life, and I've had both round and sort of more oblong watches. Like I wore, you know, digital watches at times too, which have kind of a squarish shape. So it didn't seem alien to me to go to a square watch, but I do think there is something nice and elegant about a round watch face. I would be interested to see what the trade-offs are if Apple were to design one, in terms of how do you deal with that as an interface? How do you optimize content to show up on there? Because as John was saying, I do think that the square face has really kind of, you know, it's makes sense for what you're doing with a smartwatch a lot of times. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I honestly am not sure. Again, I would think I would have to look at the trade-offs. I do like the style and the look of it, but I've gotten so used to the shape of the Apple Watch over the last almost decade that I don't even think about it anymore. And, you know, for a long, long time before that, I didn't wear a watch at all. So if nothing else, like the Apple Watch has turned me back into somebody who wears a watch every day. And I feel weird. Like I was doing sleep tracking for a while and I would need to take it off at parts of the day to recharge it. And it felt weird to like walk around with no watch on. I guess it doesn't. I've never really thought as much about the shape. I understand why they want to do a circle one, but I'm not convinced that it would necessarily be a better product. Flo, why don't you wrap us up here?
I agree with you. I appreciate you all sharing your perspectives. The UI is definitely something that I think it works really nicely on the Apple Watch's sort of square rectangular shape. And the Apple Watch feels like a harken back to like Casio days. But I do prefer the circular watch face. And I do think that if Samsung were to change its design paradigm like that, that it would just be confusing for the users. Consistency is key in consumer technology.
All right, that's two topics down, two topics to go, which of course means it's halftime here at Clockwise. And this week's episode is brought to you by Ooni Pizza Ovens. Ooni is the world's number one pizza oven company, letting you make restaurant quality pizza in your own home. Ooni Pizza Ovens can reach up to 950 degrees Fahrenheit and cook pizza in as little as 60 seconds. This high temperature is what separates these pizzas you'll make in an Ooni from those you can make in a conventional oven. And they're super quick to heat up. You'll be ready to go in only 20 minutes, which is just enough time to get all your toppings ready. Do you love an authentic wood-fired flavor? How about the convenience of cooking with gas? Well, whether you're looking to cook with wood, charcoal, gas, or even electricity, there's an Ooni oven that fits your needs and lifestyle. Ooni designed ovens like the wood pellet fueled Fira 12 and the multi fuel Karoo 12G for maximum portability. It's made for those who like cooking on the go, camping, and getting out into the wilderness. But if you want both the convenience of gas and love the flavor of wood fire cooking, Ooni's Karoo line has you covered, because you can use wood or charcoal right out of the box or get the optional gas burner for cooking flexibility. And now with Ooni's electric Volt 12 pizza oven, you can make pizza both indoors and outdoors. Ooni ovens are also for more than just pizza. You can cook juicy burgers, sizzling fajitas, buffalo wings, and so much more. Ooni pizza ovens start from just $299 with free shipping to the US, UK, and EU. And they also make cast iron cookware, pizza peels, thermometers, and loads of other accessories to help you level up your cooking. I have been enjoying the gas-powered Ooni oven that we got as a review unit, very kindly, that Ooni sent over. I've mentioned last time, like, pizza cooking has been a fraught thing in my household at times, and I think the Ooni has definitely improved things on that score. I made pizza again with it just this past weekend. I made 3 different pizzas, and I still need to work on my technique a little bit, but one of them came out, like, about perfect, like almost perfect, and it was the best pizza I think I've ever made at my home, and my family agreed. Even my child devoured an entire almost an entire pizza by himself, which is scary. So listeners of this show can get 10% off their purchase of an Uni pizza oven. Just go to uni.com and use the code clockwise2024 at checkout. Uni pizza ovens are the best way to bring restaurant quality pizza to your home. So go to ooni.com and use the code clockwise2024 for 10% off. Our thanks to Uni pizza ovens for their support of this show. And that is halftime, which means now I will turn it over to Micah Sargent.
My question for you all, how often, if ever, do you completely reset your devices and start fresh? I mean, like reformatting a computer, reinstalling the software, or in the case of your more mobile devices, completely erasing and resetting the phone and starting fresh. John, we'll start with you.
That's a good question. I think it's probably like a complete refresh. Man, with my Mac, I would say probably like 8 to 10 years. I do rely on Apple's migration assistant quite a bit, and it seems to work for a long time. And then eventually, it's almost like you're building up crud, and you have to completely scrape off the crud and start over again. I have not done that with my phone in a long, long time, though. So I don't think on the iOS side, I don't think it tends to happen quite as much. I think maybe the migration process is different enough that it doesn't bring over settings, or maybe the phone just doesn't have as many settings that are optional that would drive it crazy in the way that it often seems to happen on the Mac. It's just a thing that you have to do. I mean, I can remember my father-in-law used to brag about how fast he could completely reset his Windows XP machine. And I was like, that was a thing. And I think we're lucky that we don't have to do it quite as much as we used to do it, because I'm sure I did it a lot when I, you know, back in the earlier Mac days. But it is a thing that still exists. And every once in a while, it's best to just, I guess, nuke it from orbit.
Yeah, I probably don't do it as much as I should. I debated when I set up my new Mac Mini last year whether to start from scratch or just migrate. Because I had a computer, like John said, that built up some cruft over time. And it would just be, it was weird about a few things. And ultimately, I did end up migrating. I did not start everything up because I was just like, I got to get up and running. Like the amount of time it was going to take me to reinstall all my apps and get my licenses and get my login to everything. And I was just like, I found it intimidating. Even though I know I can do it, it's just like, it's a project. It's like a thing I got to do. Whereas the migration experience is pretty seamless for the most part on the Mac. So I ended up doing that. Am I still plagued by some weird issues sometimes? 100%. Absolutely. Would a clean install probably solve them? Probably. I'll get around to it one of these days. I think I did it once on the iPhone by accident, very early on, like maybe going from even the first iPhone to the second iPhone when that whole setup was not as well, sort of thought out there. But yeah, in general, I've done just sort of migrations just because I like the continuity of being able to like get up and running immediately and have all my stuff and not have to worry about picking all my different settings or whatever. Flo, what about you?
I should do this because I'm a Windows user, but I don't. And sometimes I will think to myself, gee, I really should take on the project one weekend of just, you know, wiping this clean, moving all those files to the external hard drives, you know, so they're archived, and just starting fresh with a nice clear computer with an SSD that is completely empty. But I don't, which is very different from my teenage days, right? And I was a teenager in the 90s and the aughts. And back then you had to do the defragging every once in a while to make sure that your files were findable, to make sure that everything was kind of like cleaning up the library, making sure all the books are back on the shelf, you know, in their proper space. And that's what defragging would do. Supposedly, in this day and age, we're not supposed to be doing that as often. Like the operating system has been programmed so that we're not worrying about maintenance as much. And also SSDs, they don't move, so they're not as annoying as hard drives used to be in the past, looking for things. You know, computers have more RAM, so there's more space. But I have to say one thing I would suggest for folks out there, with your phone particularly, go in and get rid of those bulk photos, those screenshots, the images you downloaded. If you need to put those on a desktop computer, I do that. So sometimes I'll just like dump them onto a hard drive, look at them later. I probably won't look at any of this stuff until my kid is in high school, which is about 10 years from now. But the point is, set a system so that one day when you can do the project, not everything is lost.
The reason why I brought this up is because I'm thinking about nuking from orbit, as you said, my Mac Studio. I have this problem where when little things start going wrong, they start getting weird on the computer, then I automatically start going, oh, it's time to completely reset this thing. And then anytime anything else happens, I'm like, this is just more proof that it needs to be reset. And so I don't do it not super often, but maybe every two, three years, I'll do a complete reinstall of macOS fresh and then go and grab the apps that I want. It is one way to keep me from downloading a bunch of apps that I'm not using at all as well. But more importantly, yeah, it's that I start to get suspicious that the reason this isn't working is because it just needs to be completely cleaned out and started fresh. And so eventually those add up enough to where I finally do it. But I was just curious where I kind of came in terms of average times of restarting and resetting a computer or a phone. Like you, John, I completely reset a phone far less than I have with my computer because, yeah, it does seem to do a good job. I did a long time ago used to just start fresh with every device. And then I thought, why am I doing this to myself?
So there's so many logins.
Exactly. Thank you all for your answers on that. Let us go to our next topic, which comes from John.
Yeah, I know home automation is a topic that comes up on this show quite a bit. It comes up on the Rebound. Dan and I talk about it a lot. And I am probably someone who is not as much into this as many other people. So my question for you all is how much, and you can pick the scale percentage-wise, 1 to 10, thumbs up, thumbs down, would you say that you are in on home automation? And do you see anything sort of overall that is holding this category back?
Yeah, I mean, I do some home automation stuff. I would say probably in the, like, I don't know, 60 to 70%, you know, if you're going with the percent range there, which say, you know, more than the average person, to be sure. I mean, and there's no better example for why I've kind of held off on going even more into the sort of smart home arena than yesterday. I opened up the home app and like I had like 12 devices not responding. And I'm like resetting home hubs. I'm like restarting my network. I'm like trying to figure out what's going on. And eventually it just fixes itself. But it's like, I don't know. I don't trust that it's going to be able to do things when I'm not like watching it do the things. It's like, I don't want to leave it alone by itself because who knows what shenanigans. It's like having a small child. What shenanigans might they get up to? So I think that is sort of one of the big things. A reliability thing is a big issue from why this is not more widespread. Even now, like, you know, for my basic stuff, like turning the lights off downstairs at a certain time of night, I will occasionally get up in the middle of the night or in the morning and notice that like that lamp is still on. And it's like, you were supposed to turn it off last night. I don't know what happened. So, you know, that and a certain degree of like learning curve, I think, and onboarding is as an experience have all sort of contributed to making this something that still requires a fair amount of technical know-how. I know, you know, with the Matter standard, we were supposed to see a lot of unification and simplification of these things. It didn't really happen. So, you know, stuff is still kind of a mess right now. And I think it's not getting much better. Flo, what about you?
I'm still in a pre-Matter smart home. And to be quite frank, I've taken more things offline than I have put online. At this point, I would say half my house is a smart home. And it is only automated because I like to be able to turn the lights on and off with just my voice. The other sort of things are weather. I want to know, you know, when the weather is. And so I will ask a smart speaker about it. But beyond that, it really has dialed down to just lights and security cameras. That's pretty much all the automation that I have going on. But for the most part, the only thing I've loved about automation is the fact that me being a sleepy gal, anytime I could just utter out like, hey, lights, make it so that I can sleep. And, you know, I think everybody should have voice activated lights. They were on to something with the clapper, after all.
Mm-hmm. I used to be a thumbs up, a 10, and a 97% when it came to me being into home automation. And then I moved across the country, and I moved within like a month of me starting work. And so I never really had the time in the first place to set everything up as I once had it. And then life, as it does, kept happening and continues to keep happening. I know, novel concept. And so I have never gotten back to that. So I'd say I'm maybe 50% thumb in the middle, maybe six on the scale, because I do still like automation, home automation. I do still think it's cool. And I've gone as far as to, you know, I've got custom Raspberry Pi setup that does some stuff. So that's more of a 7 and a 75%. But I don't have it all the time as I used to. And I think what's holding it back in general is that it is still a relatively singular experience when it comes to the smart home. And if you don't have, if you do have people in your life and you don't have people who are interested in it as you are, then they're not likely to be part of the setup process. So they're not likely to see kind of how it works behind the scenes. And then it also means that they're not as likely to understand how to use it exactly as you know how to use it, which means that they are likely to get frustrated about trying to use it and have it not work as you expect it to. And so we need more of the things like on wall or in wall switches and the stuff that looks like the stuff that we've had for so long, because I think that that's what makes it more able to be adopted by more people, because there needs to be a level of comfort for that outside of us who are more enthusiasts. John, why don't you wrap us up on this one?
No, thank you, everyone, for those answers, because I think I might have been leading a little bit with holding the category back part, because for me, it is the reliability issue. And also what you all said is having other people in the house who aren't as familiar with it and trying to get them to buy in on it when they don't necessarily want to. And that's fair, because we had a garage door opener that was broken for a few years, and we finally, you know, got around to having someone come out and replace it. And I didn't even think about it until after the fact. I was like, oh, I could have gotten one that was like, you know, HomeKit enabled, and I could be. And then, and after that first, you know, that initial thought that, oh my gosh, I just missed an opportunity, I was like, this is probably better. We now have these physical buttons that we can just slide onto our rear, you know, our wind sunshades in the car, and you know, it's just going to work all the time. I don't need to reboot the router. Because we have some cameras in the house. The HomePod. And a lot of times it's just like, these things aren't working quite right. I got to reboot the router. And almost always that fixes the problem. And it's like, I shouldn't have to do that. And so the problem is not so necessarily with the devices themselves. Could be something network related that needs to be cleared out. Again, cruft. I don't know. That's the problem. It's, you know, it's very difficult to tell with some of these things. So I'm to the point where I was going to say, like, I mean, I would like, optimistically, I would like to say 10%. I'm probably 5% because we don't have that much. And a lot of it is just because I don't trust it well enough to implement more at this point. And even though I missed that opportunity with a garage door opener, I'm kind of like, that's okay. So,
all right, that is four topics down. We have just enough time for a bonus topic. First, I want to quickly remind you that if you're looking for some Clockwise merch, shirts, hats, phone cases, you can find it all at clockwise.social. Help support the show. Really appreciate it. All right, really quick, I just need one word or two word answer from you. Waffles, French toast, or pancakes? Flo.
Waffles.
French toast.
False dichotomy, but French toast.
French toast was correct. Sorry, everybody. hey, if you'd like to get ad-free episodes with an extra overtime topic every week, you can become a member of Clockwise. Just go to relay.fm/clockwise and sign up for just $7 per month or $70 a year, and you'll help support the show. In this week's overtime topic, we discuss Android or iOS features we wish we had on iOS or Android, if you can follow that. All right, and with that, we've reached the end of our episode. All that remains is for us to thank our fantastic guest this week, Florence Ion. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. I love being here with you guys.
Oh, and John Moltz, thank you so much for joining us.
I enjoyed all the cookies, cake, and pizza.
Oh, man, I need a nap now. Well, thank you, listeners out there, for joining us as well. We'll be back next week, but until then, we remind everybody listening, watch what you say,
and keep watching the clock.
Bye, everybody.